Back to the Future Live. Welcome to Back to the Future Live.
Today's programme is Norfolk in Uniform, and we will be hearing about people's experiences of the armed forces. Coming up, we have Jack Stott telling us about troops in Norfolk, and Bernard talks to us about his rebellious trip to Paris.
Come home, Bill Bailey.
Invasion was a real threat in the war, and using church bells was a really good way to warn people from miles away about an invasion attack, Mrs. Pratt recalls.
After the Battle of Britain, they stopped ringing the church bells. Well, I mean, we'd got two or three good churches in Lynn, and we weren't allowed to ring them. And they said, if the church bells are rung, we shall know that it's invasion, because everyone was expecting the Germans to follow over the channel. If the church bells had gone, I suppose we'd have run like we did when the siren went.
The Home Guard was a voluntary group of men who locally protected the country from an attack. There was very little money to buy guns, and Bernard remembers his father taking part.
Dad was a member of the Home Guard, and I think they met Wednesdays and did a bit of practice in the village hall with a broomstick. That was all a bit of a ragtag and bobtail set-up, but they enjoyed themselves, and thank God we didn't ever need them.
Now, George Thomas goes into a little more detail about the work of the Home Guard.
The Home Guard was voluntary all the time, never got called up for the Home Guard. Go every Sunday morning, have a parade and learn how to do a rifle and how to shoot, how to throw a hand grenade. At one time, we were sent on the marshes to go and look for parachute people, you know, German parachutists who were supposed to have landed there to infiltrate into England. Spies, really, I think they might have been. But never found anybody.
Let's say goodbye with a smile, dear.
To make sure they were fully equipped with the knowledge for attack, training days were held to practice, and John Lincoln remembers a funny story.
The Home Guard had to fire what were called blacker bombards. They're a sort of cannon made out of 4-inch drain pipe or something like that, and it fired a bottle of phosphorus. Now, as you'll know, phosphorus exposed to the air burns, and the idea was that you'd fire the bottle of phosphorus at a tank, the bottle would burst, and the tank would be covered in blazing phosphorus. Well, about 100 of us all had a shot with this Northover projector, and then there was a few rounds left. I volunteered to fire an extra round. Now, there were 4 blacker bombards in a row, and the adjutant of the Home Guard battalion was wearing his service dress jacket and what appeared to be brand new riding boots. And he stood in front of just slightly in front, but between the 4 blacker bombards. And when I fired my second round, it burst in the barrel, and blazing phosphorus spewed out of the barrel sideways, and some of the phosphorus hit the seat of the adjutant's breeches, and all he could do was to sit on the grass and wriggle around to try and put the phosphorus out.
Still to come, John Lincoln chats to us about his encounter with the Germans overseas. Also, we hear about Jack and Pat Stott's wartime romance.
A little while later, these soldiers come in and shouted, and one of them was Jack Stott.
Now we will hear 2 stories about the different roles of men and women in wartime. The first, told by Jack Stott, tells us about places in Norfolk where troops were stationed, whilst Edna tells us about the hard work done by the Women's Land Army to help feed the nation.
Basically, there was troops around Haysborough, Munsley, North Walsham, Vacton, full of troops.
We had to go out and muck spreading, you know, with a fork. And you couldn't put your fork into the muck because it's all frozen. And that'd be snowing and snowing, and we'd have to get into a big old pit to sit and eat our lunch we had for half an hour. Every night I went home when I'd been using a fork, my hands were bleeding right there. You knew you were there to do the job, so that's just what we did.
Back to the Future Live.
Death is a part of war.
These are the emotional experiences of John Lincoln, who fought against Germans on the front line in Europe.
The company commander made certain plans for further shelling in front of us, and we came to an agreement that I think at about 11 o'clock I'd move forward again with my platoon and one other platoon that I couldn't see but was on my left. When I got back from talking to the company commander, I found that Lance Corporal in my platoon, who's in charge of a 2-inch mortar that we had, had been killed by a sniper's bullet shot through the head. And this made me so angry that when I had to get up and go forward again, I just wanted to lay my hands on anybody that I could, any of the enemy that I could see. I fired at one with a Sten gun. I've never been angrier in all my life. I moved forward with the rest of my men. I came to a mound of soil with an entrance on the far side that was covered by a camouflage ground sheet. Just as I got there, the ground sheet was drawn aside and a German soldier poked his head through and immediately poked his head back in again. The only thing I could do was to throw a grenade in that dugout. And I did. I never went inside. I moved on with the remainder of my men, and I believe that I had to do it. Because if I hadn't, the German soldier or soldiers in the dugout could have fired upon us as we had moved forward.
Back here, people were learning to live alongside the American servicemen. As a boy, Bernard Mills spent many hours at Defham Airfield.
We could get there after school with a bit of luck if there was any late ones coming in, and weekends especially. In certain cases, you know, if people had been injured, the medical people would come along and take the bodies out or the pieces out. When you saw aircraft landing that were on fire and the undercarriage all shot away and they had to land on the belly and fire crew were putting out the flames and all the rest of it. Well, it wasn't a game exactly, but it was something that at that age, and living in a place like Defham, and at that particular time, you were used to nothing else, so you didn't expect anything else. The ground crew at that time hadn't got anything to do, and they were all a bit bored. They decided to take half a dozen of them each time out to have a look at the targets that they'd been bombing. We took off on the runway that went near my house, and when I looked out, my father was loading groceries into the back of the van. We went over the Thames. I saw the two tugs pulling anti-submarine nets across the Thames. They'd got mines on to stop submarines coming in. We flew on to France. We circled Paris a few times, and I thought, well, I'll go for a walk. And the pilot said, get out there and sit in the seat. So I got up and sat in his seat. He said, put your feet on the rudder bar and get hold of the stick, and I did. And we landed about 6:45 that night, I think. Dad said, where on earth have you been? I said, well, I haven't been to school. I've been to France. He said, I don't want any of your cheek. He said, I've had a bad day.
Edna Basil recalls a much sadder memory of that time.
We were watching them all getting into formation. We saw them all go out this morning, and that was just after 7. And lunchtime, we could hear them coming back. When we looked up, there was 2 American planes collided. They collided right above our heads. And as they did that, there was bits dropping everywhere. 22 men were killed that day. Nobody got out. No, they all killed. That was a terrible day, that was.
The American servicemen soon became a big part of many people's lives.
We were invaded here. The Americans came and they'd got far much more money, nylons, sweets, and they were overgenerous. Well, hundreds, I suppose, of English girls got in with the Americans and married them. They were so friendly and open. you realise that they were miles away from home. They didn't want to be here, did they? And the dancers got very lively. And that's when the jitterbugs start. And they were fantastic. They could jitterbug, I'll tell you. You know, over your shoulder and...
Just because it was wartime, eyes could still meet. Love and romance could still blossom. And here Pat Stott records the memory of how she met her future husband, Jack.
My friend and Joan and I liked to go for walks. And we got as far as this house, which had this Cafe John in it, opposite the ship in Blackbackton. And it just poured and poured with rain, and we sheltered in this doorway of the house. A little while later, these soldiers come in and sheltered. And apparently, he tried to kiss me, and apparently, I slapped him one.
Get off!
For being so cheeky.
Thank you for listening.
To the future, live.